connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for
the computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
We actually did not talk about any sort of cold open for this episode.
So indeed, we did not.
That's kind of cool. I think we're just kind of improvising here, kind of going off the cuff, if you will. I, of course, do not have cuffs on my shirts. I am wearing a t-shirt.
And I don't have cuffs on myself at all because I'm not wearing a shirt.
Oh, yes. Very good. See, this is peak comedy, you know, talking about what clothes we're wearing. I'm sure this is very interesting and insightful and maybe relatable because some of you are probably wearing shirts and some of you are probably not wearing shirts.
I would hazard a guess that, in general, that is probably most of you. You could be wearing a dress, which is, you know, the third gender. But aside from that, it's really just shirts and not shirts.
Like my kickball games.
Yes, shirts versus skins.
Versus service.
So, welcome to NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am your co-host, Galen, and with me as always is...
the primary host, the main host, Matthew.
This is a bit of a more serious episode, I think.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about some pretty heavy stuff.
We're going to be talking about kilograms. We're going to be talking about tons.
A lot of tons. Tons of tons, one might say.
Yes, tons upon tons. The classic question is always, which one is heavier, a ton of feathers or a ton of bricks? But I think that the question that no one is ever asking is, why would you want a ton of feathers over a ton of bricks? You can sell a ton of bricks for a lot of money.
Pillow factory.
Feathers you can only sell. Yeah, but, I mean... is a ton of feathers worth more than a ton of bricks, though, at the pillow factory?
I don't know. A lot of people buy pillows. When's the last time you bought a brick?
You know, that's a good point. Hang on, I think we've got a money marketing scheme. We sell a ton of bricks for a ton of feathers.
Yes. And then we use those pillow profits to buy more bricks, which we then exchange for feathers.
So, we're talking about Bo Burnham's Inside, a comedy special... released May 30, 2021, that was filmed over the course of the last year in quarantine during the COVID-19 pandemic. And I want to start with a disclaimer. So in talking about these themes, I will be sort of bringing up Bo Burnham and his history and sort of like themes in his work. And I want to start with the disclaimer that we do not know Bo Burnham. And not just we, but, like, everyone who is not, like, personally met and personally knows him doesn't really know Bo Burnham. Like, I want to avoid speculating over Bo Burnham's true mental health or, you know, things like that. I want to avoid... assuming that we know more than we do, because at the end of the day, everything that is shown in the special is still something that Bo felt comfortable showing. Like, he felt comfortable showing, you know, like, a panic attack, but that's still the stuff that he felt comfortable showing to an audience of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. And so, like, when I, at the very least, talk about things like his history with the internet, how he got big, how he got famous, things like that, I am speaking entirely in terms of thematic weight, entirely in terms of, you know, how I feel to interpret to this song, but I am not speaking in terms of who Bo Burnham actually is.
Yes, we are speaking as critics and not, like, psychologists. And
yeah.
In this sort of scenario, these are made for the purpose of entertainment, typically. And so it's not really made for the purpose of, like, solely for the purpose, I should say, of learning about someone's mental state. And I highly recommend not trying to heavily ascribe things like that. Like, don't diagnose people. Unless it's your job to, and you're trained to, and you are, then they've signed paperwork for you to do so. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
our positions are from interpreting the text or the music and video, as this case, and getting interpretations from that, but those are not judgment calls or, you know, prescriptions. Also, we don't really do content warnings, I realized, but I feel like we should do a quick one.
Yeah, this, if you have not seen Inside, you should see it, but at the same time, also know that it deals with a lot of heavy stuff. It deals with suicide. It deals with, existential dread. It deals with a lot of triggering topics. And so, if you are cool with that and still interested, you should absolutely watch it. You should absolutely, you know, consume the content. But if you are not, then please be warned about both the special and this episode.
Yes.
Also, I think subsequently this is going to assume no small amount of familiarity with, at the very least, the songs. So, you know, once again, this is if you are interested, then please do listen and, you know, watch and then come back to this.
Yeah. Okay. So with that out of the way, where should we begin?
Man, I guess can begin with the first song, but okay, I know where I want to begin. Who is Bo Burnham? What are the direct facts of Bo Burnham?
I keep hearing this name, Bo Burnham. Who could he be?
So Bo Burnham is a comedian musician who got started in the early internet. He I believe his first upload was a song called My Whole Family Thinks I'm Gay, which was him in his room with a camera pointing at him, playing the piano and singing this song. And he, you know, did this, he did more and more of that sort of style, and he was one of the first YouTube, success stories. He was one of the first big people to go viral on the platform and sort of prove that, you know, you can get big from making funny videos online. He was almost a, I won't say pioneer in that sort of genre. He proved that this was something to take seriously. And so he got big as that. He got big as a content creator. And then he branched out into actually doing stand-up comedy and music on stage. I believe his first special was his first special Words, Words, Words? I think it was Words, Words, Words.
I think so.
Yeah, his first special was 2011. This isn't Fact Corner because I haven't looked any of this up before. Yeah. this is entirely all off the cuff. But yeah, his first special was probably Words, Words, Words. And then he had other specials like What and Make Happy. I believe he had 4 in total before Inside. But notably, around 2016, he did Make Happy, which was his final special and presumably was his final special kind of forever. Because as he explains in Inside that the reason that he quit was because he was having severe panic attacks on stage. But that was sort of, I believe, unknown. It was generally just more that what was more known was that he was having a bad time of doing it, and so kind of decided to just step away. He wasn't completely inactive. He made Eighth Grade, a wonderful movie, so I've heard, in 2018. And then the next time that anybody had really heard of him content-wise was Inside, which just sort of dropped out of nowhere onto Netflix.
Yes.
Thankfully, it is raining, so the mood is being set. Hopefully you can hear the auditory thumping against my window and roof.
Are you sure that's rain? That might be some sort of weird monster.
Yeah. So it's the monster that appears when you talk about Bo Burnham.
So, brief note about Bo Burnham's sort of style. You mentioned that he is a musical comedian. Very similar to Weird Al or Lonely Island, where, like, his songs often have a funny sort of theme or concept behind them. And, you know, they incorporate a lot of, like, playing with musical form for the sake of comedy. Things like breaking rhyme schemes in order to emphasize a joke, for example. Or breaking rhythm to emphasize a joke. A lot of breaking the general music convention to emphasize a joke. And in his specials, he also incorporates stand-up, like you said, where he'll kind of incorporate more typical talking in front of a microphone, saying some jokes, saying a relatable story that segues to his next thing. But he also has a pretty big reliance on, like, pre-recorded elements in his specials. I especially know this in What and in Make Happy and Inside as well. There's a lot of, like, he will do something and then a recording will, like, say something to him, even though it's just a recording of his voice, and he'll kind of play off that, bounce back and forth. So there's a lot of these aspects of, like, he'll use, like, voice changers to, like, pitch up or down his voice and kind of make it seem like there's a sort of interaction between him and some third party. And this is definitely true as well with Inside. And I think as we go into Inside, I'll bring this up a bit more, but keep that sort of style in mind.
He also, it should be noted, like, is extremely choreographed. Like, he has a script. We actually saw Make Happy live, and he has a script that he really does not stray from. Like, he makes multiple jokes about it, where, you know, I think one of the more famous ones was, like, he knocked a water bottle over during, I think, Make Happy. Actually, no, I think
it's
that one
during
was
What, because I just rewatched What this morning.
Yeah, he knocks a water bottle over during What, and he's like, oh, geez, oh, I'm Butterfingers, whatever. And then a song begins playing where he's like, he meant to knock the water over. Yeah, 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 you all thought it was an accident.
Nothing is real.
Yeah. That's actually another theme that's constant in songs like Art is Dead and just sort of like one-offs like that is the veneer of art. Like, the artifice of it, of, you know, he inherently likes to have extremely pre-structured, you know, sets, but he has to appear spontaneous, and so he likes to play with that a lot of, you know, this idea of art as an experience to the people watching it, but as something entirely constructed and entirely sort of meaningless to the person performing it.
Yeah, it's a lot like wrestling.
Yeah, a lot of kayfabe.
Yes. Inside is very interesting, though, because whereas his previous specials were pretty much recorded over one night doing, like, a show, and so they had, like, a very specific time crunch, Inside was recorded over the course of a year, and so instead of playing with a very short amount of time and, like, playing off of his own previous jokes in a quick time span to, like, really hammer in the reminder that this is all choreographed, Inside really messes with the like, length of time, the passing of time. It is a very, I mean, it's, like, still an hour long or so, but it really drives home the time spent actually making it and producing it.
Yeah, like, the most obvious, like, visual indicator is that his beard, he doesn't shave during the production of it, and so, you know, as it goes on, you can see his beard length jumping around like he's Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz. And so, it has thematic weight, because, well, if the theme of 2020 wasn't the meaninglessness of time, I don't know what it was.
Yeah. And Inside, it should also be noted, part of the hook of it is that it was all recorded in one room, much like the early internet sort of videos he did. All of Inside is pretty much just in one room of his house. It does multiple camera shots from many different angles, which kind of adds this sense of, like, completeness, I guess. But ultimately, there's not really any other sort of set or scenery He uses a lot of, like, projectors to show images, but not much other in the way of, like, visuals.
Yeah, he has really good use of lighting as well. Like, both him, you know, doing live stand-up and in Inside, he has very good control over the lighting and, like, you know, the choreography of that lighting as well. Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely shown in the first song content where, like, it starts off very dark with only a little bit of light, and then as the song kind of crescendos, a, like, disco ball or mirror ball appears in the ceiling, and it gets really reflective and starry.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to go down in the order, which means we'll also probably be skipping a few songs, so you should listen to all of them. But I think the first one I want to talk about is Comedy.
Yeah.
Which is the second song. So, Comedy sets one of the big important themes to me, because the joke of the song, the crux of the song, is he is wondering what he can do to help, to, like, do anything about the terrible situation that's happening right now being 2020. And he decides the only thing that a white dude like me can do is, you know, be, like, tell jokes, make people laugh during this terrible time. But he, like, I don't think that it isn't sincere, but he plays with that idea, which he also plays it with some of his other songs, like Sad. He makes the joke, like, the bridge is, if you wake up in a house that's full of smoke, don't panic, call me up and I'll tell you a joke. If you see white men dressed in white cloaks, don't panic, call me up and I'll tell you a joke. Like, the comedy of comedy is that he is doing something kind of useless. He is making a difference metaphorically, making a literal difference metaphorically, where, yes, he is kind of helping people, he is making people laugh, but, like, is doing comedy actually helping? You know, is another white guy with another special on Netflix really helping anything, especially right now when there's things happening, there is, you know, social movements currently occurring, you know, people dying because of starvation, and he's sitting here and making funnies.
Yeah, it's like, it's a sort of introspective irony that he mentions things, you know, like after the chorus or whatever, he says, like, you're really joking at a time like this. Like, to kind of acknowledge that it's not necessarily the right time for comedy, in that, like, there's really important things to discuss. There's a lot of problems at hand. Just sitting back in a room and telling jokes isn't going to help, and it almost is counterproductive. But at the same time, it's like, there's not much else to, like, push people along at times. I think another really interesting thing is that in the background, he has, like, dissections of comedy going on.
Yeah.
He has, like, a whiteboard that has a bunch of stuff written on it through different scenes. One of them is a flowchart of something being funny, and it basically just includes, like, is it offensive? Does it punch down? You know, pretty decent questions to ask yourself. Another one is, like, a taxonomy of comedy, which is super funny to me because it's very apt. There's, like, one corner has, like movies, and it has things like wrestlers being afraid of spiders, or very apt two-word names. And then there's, like, TV shows, and it includes, like, subversive comedy cartoon for guys in their 30s. Eventually it goes back around, and in the top right there's stand-up, and it just includes podcasts. And from that is a bubble that says genius, or geniuses. So thanks, Bo Burnham, for having our back. But no, it's like, besides the whole making a difference in the world and whether or not that's good, it shows sort of a process, but also a, like, admonishing of the process by being very snide about making a difference. it kind of makes these like flowcharts and stuff seem almost like I don't know, just like phoning it in, like following a formula. I'm not really sure exactly.
Yeah, no, it's sort of, it's funny because the idea of dissecting jokes with those specific terms is funny, but the, you know, underlying message seems very like, all sort of like, you know, hasn't all of this been tried before? Feels very, you know, this is things that comedians have written, and I'm going to be another one doing this. I also really like the touches of like the white savior complex of it, where, you know, like Lord help me channel Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side.
Yeah.
But like I feel like that is a very, it's a very cutting critique, because like for years I was one of these assholes too, but like for years assholes have been, you know, defending people and defending comedians under the guise of like, you know, oh, they're the philosophers of our generation, and you know, oh, they're speaking truth to power. But like, and you know, a lot of comedians do. I am very pro comedian. I'm very pro comedy. I think that comedy can change the world, but I think that those kinds of, you know, immediate defenses do need to be taken with a lot of criticism, because you, like, they are also very often used to defend, you know, the Joe Rogans or the Ricky Gervaises of, you know, hey, I'm going to get on stage and be transphobic. Isn't that hilarious? So yeah, I'm basically speaking truth to real power and, you know, taking down those elites, those gay people and teenagers on Tumblr. Someone's finally getting their number. Like, it's useless. It's, if you are not saying, if you're not speaking truth to actual power, then you're just being a dick on stage. And so I love this commentary on that sort of, you know, that snobbishness that, which also comes up in How the World Works as well.
Yeah.
Of, you know, it's this self-interested narcissism of I'm going to be the one to change the world.
Yeah. I do think that's a good segue into How the World Works. Which yeah. does the comedy song thing of introducing a, like, kid show-esque speaker and then having them speak something, like, incredibly, I don't know, woke, I guess? Yeah. Or something just out there. It kind of reminds me of, the like, there's a Whitest Kids You Know sketch where it's, like, they start talking about, like, following rules and sharing and being nice, and then at the end it just teaches you how to make crystal meth. It's kind of like that, where, like, it starts off kind of innocent-ish, you know? He talks about, like, nature healing and working together. And then when Sako, the like, sock puppet comes on, it's about, you know, history is actually about wars and getting, you know, territory and ruling over people and exploitation of the workers for wealth.
And the FBI killed Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which they just did. Yeah. Fun fact, that I know, at the Selma Hotel, like, museum, there is a section, I believe it is across the street where he was shot, that literally lays out why Martin Luther King Jr. could not have been shot by the guy that, that, like, it was pinned on. And I don't remember if it literally just implies that the FBI did shoot him, but like, just there is more evidence that the FBI killed Martin Luther King Jr. than like anything about JFK. Our government just did kill Martin Luther King, so please keep that in mind the next time some asshole on Fox News insists we're not racist because of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Also, he was a socialist. Anyway,
I also love, after that whole verse, it gets to a part where Bo Burnham's like, wow, how can I help? And Sokka's like, I don't know, why do you rich white people always try to interject yourself into these things and, like, put your own self as a center of attention by helping people? You're just helping yourself. It's yeah. this great, like overcorrecting on being an ally.
Yeah, I feel like that had to have been written at around the time of like the Imagine cover at the start of the pandemic.
Yeah,
you know, when all these fucking Hollywood people were like, imagine there's no suffering. We can get through this together. I'm going to retire to my mansion now.
Imagine no possessions. I'm incapable of doing so. That type of thing. Yeah, just incredibly tone deaf.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the early songs feel kind of standard, I guess. There's a lot of mundanity. Even like How the World Works is kind of... You could write that any year, if you will. There's a lot of things like there's FaceTime with my mom, or there's White Woman Instagram that feel kind of, like I said, mundane, everyday, normal. I think somewhere...
They feel like they could have been basically any of Bo Burnham's previous specials.
Right. I think around the halfway-ish point is where it really starts to turn. But there's two bits I want to talk about that are not songs, that are very, very thematically coherent and cohesive yeah. and relevant. Both of these are very heavily visually edited. The first one is where he sings the song Unpaid Intern, which is like less than a minute. And then he shows up on screen and he's like, I'll be reacting to that song you just heard and explaining my thought process. And it does the thing that we mentioned last week in Devolver, where it overlays the video you just watched on the current video, and then the characters react to the video that's playing, which is them talking about the video. It does the Spaceballs thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it plays the Unpaid Intern song, and he's like explaining his thought process about making the song, and then it starts playing that exact analysis, and he's like, okay, so now it's playing me talking about the song, and then he goes on to critique that critique of the song,
it keeps going. It first of all, everybody here who's getting a little bummed out, go on YouTube and look up Tay Zonde TF2. You just do that. It's really funny. Second of all, so. I think this is another really great usage of that sort of trope. In this case, it's sort of like, this is something Bo Burnham does a lot, where he'll like explain what he did over, like he'll explain it way too much. And the joke is that he explains it too much. There's a lot of jokes in this special that are like very, very blunt. I think Jeffrey Bezos is very obvious in that regard, where it's just hyping up Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, it's hyping up Jeff Bezos in the sort of terms that, you know, like it starts out in the terms that Business Insider and shit uses for him. But then it gets into the, you know, the millennial, you know, drink their blood. Fuck them.
Yeah. But then like Unpaid Intern as well is very blunt in what it's parodying and what it's joking about. And in eventually the sort of analysis of the analysis of the analysis just becomes this sort of chaos, this sensory overload of like too many layers of visuals, too much audio going on. It becomes a mess. And so part of Inside, and well, I guess part of Bo Burnham's comedy is that it's all him. He's the only like character. I mean, there will be like other characters that appear in terms of like their tone or voice, but it's all played by him. And Inside is very lonely because you're just constantly seeing Bo Burnham alone in a room with like not really any indication towards the outside. It's entirely inside. And I think this layering of the visuals really hammers home that loneliness, that like he can keep adding layers of Bo Burnham, but it's still just Bo Burnham over and over again. I think also that this sort of just a quick aside that this sort of loneliness is kind of Hitchcockian, Hitchcock-esque, is that the word? Like, Hitchcock was very big into these, like, enclosed, very cramped spaces. You know, think of it like Lifeboat, I think it was called. There's that one about a dinner party where two people kill a person and hide them in a trunk. Like, Hitchcock's MO was like putting people in very small areas and playing off the tension that arrives around that. And in some ways, Inside reminds me of that, where like the multiple camera angles let us become intimate with the room and like kind of picture ourselves there. But it also starts to feel claustrophobic as like all the walls start to look the same, or we've seen those walls 100 times already. We start to feel like we're trapped in there. I say we, maybe me is the better sort of thing to do there. But like it very like gives the sense of claustrophobia of being trapped.
Yeah.
And I think the visual chaos in that like reaction video, or like the layering of Bo Burnham's, only serves to make it feel more crowded in that small room.
Yeah. I want to briefly talk about White Woman's Instagram, because I want to briefly talk about it. I don't have a whole lot to say about it thematically, but I do want to shout it out, basically, because it is funny. And it is very like funny because it's true, you know, in that like multiple friends of mine have been like, I have friends who have this exact fucking Instagram, mm-hmm. who are definitely all white women. So it is funny and it is true, but it also does like a lot to humanize at the bridge of like, you know, the really emotional post made by this random woman. And it is a comedy song, but like, it is not entirely punching down. Like, the white women Instagram are funny. They are kind of, you know, really high and mighty and really, like, save your old complexes again sort of, you know, posts and whatnot. But at the same time, these are things that, like, they take a lot of work to set up these kinds of really artsy shots. It isn't... People have this idea that, you know, photography and things like that are just, you know, oh, finding some random bullshit and then taking a picture. Like, no, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of skill to compose these kinds of things. And, you know, I think that when he shows it later in the special, his process of actually setting those up, he really sort of emphasizes that, yes, this sort of thing takes a lot of effort, and that is worth commending. So even though he is criticizing and making fun of it, he is also, like, appreciative of it.
Yeah. In some elements, it reminds me of low-cost cosplay, where there's an art and craft to, like, how he participates in the things he's depicting, despite being in such a small area and, like, not having as much to work with. I wanted to bring up another sort of visual segment, the other one I mentioned beforehand, other than the other one I mentioned beforehand, which is the stream segment. So,
yes,
at least once before this, it actually flashes in the corner of the screen, like him sitting in the gamer chair.
Yeah.
Which really caught me off guard at first. I was like, is this going to have like a web series turn in the middle? But then, so what happens is it's like him in like a Twitch stream, sitting in like a gamer chair, and he's
sorry,
like,
if I may, I downloaded the program from a website. It was 1ns1d3.exe.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
So, for one thing that I love is during this segment, he calls out Twitch subscribers. He just, like, makes up names. It's a really good, like, commitment to the bit. But so, he opens, like, all right, today I'm going to check out this game Inside that I've heard so much about. Really excited to try this. I know a lot of people have recommended it. And, you know, it's like, there is a real game called Inside, and it is quite highly critically regarded. And so it's obvious that he's building up to just the special being called Inside, but there is sort of a little joke there.
Yeah. But
so when he opens it, it's just like him in a room, and there's different like commands to interact with things, kind of David Cage-y. And he calls it an escape room, which I find super interesting, because like escape rooms are obviously a genre of game, both video game and like a physical thing, but as like a gamer, if you're inside a room and you're trapped, kind of the immediate the immediate instinct is that you have to solve a puzzle or find some way out. Seek a way out. But the premise of Inside is that he can't leave because of the extenuous circumstances about, like, the pandemic. And so if we put it in a video game context, it makes sense to think of it as an escape room. But if we take it out of that, there's this interesting, underlying, like, connotation of wanting to escape the room you're in because of quarantine.
Yeah, it uses the language of video game and video game tropes to sort of, you know, denote that want for escapism, and also sort of, like, the hopelessness of it. Like, one of his buttons is literally just cry.
Yeah. He also comments on how, like, boring the visuals are, how it's not really engaging. And he's like, all right, but I'll give it a shot. I'll see if this goes somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I also this might be the last time that I sort of bring up this theme. One of my favorite, probably my favorite bits, my, like, intermittent bits between the music, is after 30. And this is where the trigger warning, like, really kicks in. The last line of 30 is like, in 2030, I'll be 40 and I'll kill myself then. And immediately after that is a video of him talking to the camera. And he's basically like, hey, so by the way, you know, I don't actually want to kill myself. And if you want to kill yourself, and then, like, it takes a little turn where he's like, if you want to kill yourself, just, like, don't, you know, like, just don't, man. You know, like, don't bother. It has the tone of, like, you know, don't bother people with that, you know, man. And, like, it's funny because, you know, the irony is that usually when people talk about that sort of thing and actually open up about that, it's very, you know, empathetic of, like, you know, if you're struggling with this, then, you know, you should call someone, talk to someone. And he does kind of have that message. He does sort of bring up, you know, hey, you know, you might have people who love you in the future, even if you don't have people who love you right now. So you never know what it holds. But, like, the just juxtaposition of, like, the, you know, the very sort of opening up of his struggles, but then sort of saying, you know, when other people bother when other people bother him, it's kind of like, you know, hey, man, knock that shit off. It, I think, keys into the sort of, again, entitlement idea that I've spoken about before, where it's like, you know, when rich people, when famous people talk about their struggles, it's always very, you know, oh, you're so brave. But, like, many people deal with roughly the same things every single day. And, like, yeah, it does help to normalize those things, but it really does kind of have that air of, like, hey, don't bother me with this stuff.
Yeah. Go to work. Don't call off work because you're struggling really hard with important issues.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can struggle on your own time.
Yeah. I also want to bring up that this video is playing on a projector that's projecting onto his shirt. And he's just kind of looking with, like, a dead look in his eyes. Like, a very distant stare.
I think he's, like, looking at his phone or something. But, like, yeah, it starts to be projected onto himself, which is something that, like, he does multiple times as well. And I also think that's really interesting. Because, like, it gives it that separation where, like, I feel like, it is obviously a joke. But I feel like if it were just that video playing, it would not track nearly as well as it does, like, projecting onto him. Because when it's projecting onto him sort of staring blankly, it gives that separation of, like, he is looking at his own bit and maybe kind of thinking, like, is this really a bit I should be doing? You know, that sort of that degree of, you know, decision making.
Right. There are two songs I really want to go in depth into, and they happen after 30, I believe, after, like, that halfway point. And they are very, One of they're my two favorite songs of the special, and most people's favorite songs as well. And they're both super, like, I don't want to say deep, but maybe, like, complex.
Is one of them Welcome to the Internet?
Yes.
Okay. Because that's definitely, I think that might be my second favorite song. We haven't gotten to my first favorite, but yeah, Welcome to the Internet, I also really want to talk about, because I am so happy that that one, like, blew up, basically. I'm not surprised it did. Especially, like, it has the tone of the kind of song that blows up on TikTok, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I am so happy that it has, and I want to talk about that as well.
Yeah, so Welcome to the Internet, I heard it described as a song the robot double in Futurama would, like, dance to or sing to. It has, like, the piano line is this very, like, I don't know what the word would be. It's not really swing, but it's like...
Like barbershop music.
Yeah. And so the song is just sort of a giant takedown of the internet. It opens with just like saying like, welcome to the internet. Please enjoy your stay. We have mountains of content. If none of it's of interest to you, you'd be the first. You know, just kind of doing that. Then it talks about, like, all the different content. There's a lot of really bizarre things. A lot of just, like, really out there things. A lot of radical things as far as, like, radicalizing people. Things like instructions on how to build a bomb. There's a really good bit where it's, like, find a tumor, something...
Yeah, it's start a rumor, buy a broom, or send a death threat to a boomer, or DM a girl and groom her, do a Zoom or find her tumor.
Yeah, it's like that part really combines the which is a very popular vowel consonant combo right now on the internet. The oom. But it just like it takes this really quick whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web, one might say, over just like all these different things. But then it kind of explodes and it gets down to this like very quiet part. And this is super interesting. He makes a distinction between like he literally says before the towers fell, which is a very like dramatic way of talking about 9/11 now that I think about it.
But
he says like, you know, early internet was like there were some chat rooms, some blogs. It was a lot more disorganized. But also kind of pure in that regard. And then afterwards, he specifically, when he's doing this, he's talking to somebody who is, like, pretty young. Because he mentions, like, mommy let you borrow her iPad, you were barely two. So, like, somebody who would have been two when iPads had already been out. You know, a Zoomer, one might say. And so,
yeah,
it kind of paints this idea of, like, interests, whether they're corporate or political or what have you, kind of took to the internet and like warped things in a way to encourage constant engagement and then also feed that engagement. The phrase like insatiable you comes up and then it goes into the main refrain, which is like, can I interest you in everything all of the time? And then like apathy is a tragedy, boredom is a crime. Basically, this kind of ties into Content, which is the first song on the special. I almost said on the album, which is about just like, daddy made you some content. Here's some content open wide. Like the position of a consumer of content on the internet is one of like constant boredom or dissatisfaction, like always having to be consuming something, whether it's a video or a podcast or an article or anything, social media. And because engaging in content gets companies money, they want you to engage. And so they feed into that sort of addictive behavior, the everything all of the time.
I wanted to do a YouTube video just sort of talking about the wonderful layers of this song. So I just want to rapid fire a lot, just things I love about this. Just nod or shake your head and we'll do the rest. I love the shake your head. Like, do you want this? Yes or no? Yes or no, no matter what, we're going to give it to you. You know, like, you can't escape the internet. If you don't want to engage in the internet, you're going to have to engage in the internet. I love the constant juxtaposition of, like, you know, just random, you know, innocent whatever with just, like, horrible, horrible reality. You know, here's a tip for straining pasta. Here's a 9-year-old who died. One of my favorite visual moments when he is talking about, like, here's a healthy breakfast option. You should kill your mom. He looks at one camera and then another between those two. But then he looks at a third for, here's why women never fuck you. Here's a, you can build a bomb. And I feel like that's intentional of, like, you know, here are some unrelated things, but this one is, like, a very direct reference of, like, the pipeline between, you know, dissatisfied young men and terrorism.
Yeah. I also do just love, one of my favorite examples of breaking the rhythm of the song to make a joke is when he says, we have color pencil pictures of all the characters of Harry Potter fucking. Just, it does not rhyme. It does not fit the meter. He has to really quickly get it out so he can get to the next line, which just emphasizes it even further. The specific note of colored pencil is also great. Not even like a digital medium.
Yeah, it's so good. I love the, like, the, you know, a guy sends you a photo of his cock, don't act surprised, you know, you like it, you whore. I love that, like, you know, the sort of, you know, victim blaming aspect of the internet of, like, you know, oh, you could always turn it off. You could always turn this thing we literally designed to be addictive and never want you to turn off of it off. I love, apathy is a tragedy and boredom is a crime. One of the best lines in any song I've ever heard. Like,
yeah.
Apathy is a tragedy, boredom is a crime. Like, apathy is such a massive problem that is just entirely fed into by this internet, by this culture of constant engagement. But we don't consider that bad. We don't consider it bad that we see tragedies happen every single day and just eventually get fucking bored of it.
Yeah, it's...
But boredom...
It's
boredom is the problem.
It's also that, it, on the internet, you kind of can't have a middling opinion of something. There's a lot of... It encourages very, like, extreme polar viewpoints, you know? Like, it's either a 10 out of 10 video game or a 0 out of 0 video game. You know,
yeah.
A lot of hyperbole. And so, in a way, like, apathy being a tragedy is both referring to how it's a shame that people get so numb from tragedy that they feel apathetic towards it. There's, like, that social media burnout. But also, there is, just, like, from the view of the companies who are singing this, their point of view, apathy is a tragedy because it's not engaging. It doesn't drive clicks.
Yeah.
And boredom is a crime because, like, in all intents and purposes, everything is laid out specifically for that. Like, if you are bored of the content on the internet, that is illegal. You must consume.
Yeah. The bridge is honestly probably the biggest reason I wanted that, like, I wanted to put that disclaimer at the beginning, because I feel like the bridge is, like, it is directed at a younger audience, like, mommy let you use her iPad, you were barely two. Also, and it did all the things we designed it to do, like, we got you hooked. We, the companies of the internet, got you hooked.
This was not a mistake.
Yeah, but we're the ones calling you insatiable, which is also a great sort of, you know, arrogant thing. But I feel like the bridge... you have to consider Bo Burnham's own, like, upbringing, because I am not going to say Bo Burnham doesn't want his platform. Bo Burnham didn't want anything that happened to him. I don't know anything about Bo Burnham, but I feel like you could easily read this as, like, a sort of tragic, like, the tragedy of being made famous for being a child on the internet, you know? Like, for getting early, really early famous and being, you know, really, really catapulted into this pedestal. And it reads really angry of like, how dare the companies that sort of exploited me did this to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go
ahead. I'm keeping this in.
That's fair. And so, like, I feel like that's the unstoppable watchable line is sort of, you know, this we built you, you know, it was always the plan to put the world in the hand. We are the ones that built you up. And now look at how big you've become. Look, honey, look how far you've gone. And like, it's, you know, certainly he has gone far. Certainly people who get famous off the internet do go far. But is that a good thing? Is this something that, you know, we needed? Is this something that, you know, is actually positive, especially for people who like get famous on, you know, one big thing and never can top it again? And so, yeah, I want that reading in there because this song feels like it is directed to the audience, but also it is directed at Bo himself.
The unstoppable watchable also felt to me like the sort of drive to both participate in the cycle of content. I think it's like, you know, the dream job for kids nowadays is to be a YouTuber, a TikTok star, or, you know, something like that, a streamer. It's not to be a rock star or an astronaut or whatever. And
yeah.
I think that's sort of very poignant that the people who are being called these, like, insatiable consumers are also being called watchable. You can put yourself out there. Everybody can see every waking hour of your day if you want. They can get really intimate into the presentation of you on the internet.
Yeah.
Honestly, the song kind of opened my eyes a bit into my own habits. I really have a bad habit of constantly looking for entertainment, I guess. Even when I'm in the car, if I'm not driving, I'll like put on some music, but then I'll also be surfing the internet. I have just like this bad habit of trying to constantly interact with the internet, and it's probably pretty unhealthy.
Yeah. I
need to like read a book or something, go outside, take a walk.
Father, I cannot click the book. I also, much like you said, I love the like right before the towers fell circa 99. I love that sort of that, you know, pining for an era that is forever lost to us. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, there is no internet like the early internet, and there never will be. And on some hands, that's good. On some hands, that's bad. But, like, we will never know a life without the internet. I mean, like, there are people born now who never have not had YouTube, never have not had, you know, TikTok. And so, and, like, we can actively see things changing. I think there was a recent, like, Todd in the Shadows review where he talked about Montero by Lil Nas X, and he kind of made the point that, like, this is a 2-minute song, and to me that sounds unfinished, but, like, man, we live in a generation that, you know, has had TikTok for years and had Vine, and, like, maybe this is the perfect length for them.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds unfinished to me because I'm a fucking boomer.
Something, something the TV shows in Fahrenheit 451. Something, something Ray Bradbury invented earbuds. So there's one other main song I want to talk about. I guess the last song I want to talk about, but this is the other huge one from the special that a lot of people connected with. And that is, I was trying to think of something funny, but no, that's the funny feeling, or that funny feeling.
Thank God. Good. Because that was also the one that I really wanted to talk about. I thought you were going to say, like, you know, All Eyes on Me or something.
No, yeah. That funny feeling, which is presented like a campfire song. He has like a projection of trees in the background. There's some of like a fire crackling sound effect going on. Maybe some like insect chirps, which gives it at the start a serene quality that quickly turns somber as you kind of realize what he's talking about. The phrase "that funny feeling" starts off kind of vague, but again, like, there's a noticeable turn in the song where you start to really understand what he's doing, And it, to me, it feels like I also can't really explain what that funny feeling is, but I know it and I can relate to it, but it's kind of undescribable.
Yeah. So that funny feeling is my favorite song from the special. It used to be Welcome to the Internet, but then I listened to that funny feeling again, and Welcome to the Internet feels like the past of the internet, and like the recent past, the like 2010s past. It feels like, you know, how I got here, but that funny feeling feels like here. And to me, that funny feeling is like the feeling that the world is ending and all we can do is scroll through Twitter.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know, again, this constant dissociation between, you know, the positive and the negative. And so, like, I mean, the first line of, you know, stunning 8K resolution meditation app in honor of the revolution, it's half off at the Gap. It's, you know, that feeling of things that, you know, anything that is good is getting co-opted. Anything that is bad is getting exploited. Anything that is, you know, funny and harmless is ultimately feeding into something terrible. The world, 20,000 year, this, 7 more to go. Oh. I love that line.
Right. Well, I want to put you on a hold real quick for a sec. Sorry.
Go ahead.
That, first of all, there's the phrase, like, following the traffic laws in Grand Theft Auto 5, that to me, it feels like a lot of the early things he lists are like, they're kind of like just strange things. Maybe not necessarily funny strange. They're kind of like Alanis Morissette's ironic. Like, they're kind of makes you think. Some of them, like Robert Iger's face, aren't really a direct contradiction, but more of just like something weird or off, maybe. But then there's the line, the whole world at your fingertips, which is the callback to Welcome to the Internet, the ocean at your door. And that then goes into 20,000 years of the 7 more to go at some point in the future. Like, there's a very clear turn at that line, the ocean at your door, where, like, at first when I listened to it, I was like the beach. And then he said like 7 more to go. I was like, oh. And that's where I think it really becomes clear what that funny feeling is to me.
Yeah, the ocean at your door and that the 20,000 years of the 7 more to go, that reads like there are multiple, you know, references to like climate change and, you know, the ending of it all, the quiet comprehending of the ending of it all. And like, that's why I think that like that funny feeling is the understanding that, you know, we are living through, like, we are living through the end of an empire and things are collapsing. You know, the people in power aren't doing anything to stop the things that are totally stoppable that most of us want to stop, but it isn't profitable, so they're not doing it, you know? And that's like, that funny feeling to me is that it's the terrible realization that we can't change the world yet. And by the time that we can, it might be too late.
Yeah. There's another great sort of unsettling line of like that unassuming summer air in early fall, where it's another example of climate change that, like, to me, it took a second to hit. And then I was like, oh, I see what's happening. This very feeling, because I've noticed that, like, it feels like seasons are really extreme, even more than usual. But then, like, there's also the second verse. He goes over like full agoraphobic, cover blown. Then he mentions disassociation. And then he mentions looking up derealization and like shuddering at what you find. So I want to go over these three because, again, there's no way to know who Bo Burnham is or what he's actually struggling with. But if we take this with the admission of his panic attacks, it feels like he's referencing that. So like, here's what I'm saying. I don't want to say that I am talking with certainty about him, because I am not, but it feels like the, like, agoraphobia, you know, cover blown is like having a huge panic attack around a lot of people. And then like you know, disassociation, depression, all that stuff leads from that sort of initial spark, I guess. Obviously, Googling symptoms is not very helpful, especially like Googling diseases and diagnosing yourself. But I did look up derealization as per the song. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, the feeling of observing of feeling like you're observing yourself from out of your body, or like the feeling that something isn't real. I really want to touch back on the visual segments I talked about. So both of those involve Bo observing his body from out of his body. The analysis had him looking at himself analyzing something, and the video game had him playing himself. Both of those also highlight the levels of artifice, with the video game being a video game, and the analysis having him watching a video of himself. So those are not like the tier one of reality Bo, if you will. And I think there is, again, it's like, this is another example of the uncomfortability of Inside, that by getting an inside look at Bo Burnham, we're also kind of seeing these sort of uncomfortable topics and themes discussed. But it's also this sort of feeling of like, we're also observing Bo, and we can't get truly inside his brain or his mind or his perspective. And the feeling that we are watching somebody else live their life is kind of poignant then, kind of apt to our experience just as a consumer.
Yeah.
And in general, so like the song ends with this sort of powerful refrain of like, we were overdue, but it'll be over soon, which feels just kind of like acceptance of the end. I want to say that, like, I try not to be, I guess, cynical or nihilistic, but this song just kind of puts together this sort of like tapestry of evidence of like, things are gone downhill, they're going downhill, at this point we can kind of just have to hold on. It reminds me, if you go back to like the song Comedy, it's like, this is almost not a funny song. This is like a really depressing and kind of real song, and there's not much comedy can do to fix something like climate change and flooding of, you know, land that people live on. So he just kind of sings about it without trying to make it a joke.
Yeah. I do want to sort of like interject as well and say, like, I feel this song, and I feel these, like, I relate to this so fucking much. You know, I relate to this exact feeling of like, I want things to change. I want to also help them change, but it seems like they simply won't. And I say that, like, it is easy, and honestly, to no small amount, true to basically to say, like, it'll be over soon, you wait. But I also sort of want to kind of, like, say that, like, it'll be over soon doesn't necessarily mean that things are going to explode. This is actually a problem I have with media in general, which I'll talk about a different day because we've been going on for long enough. But any media that acts like climate change is simply an inevitability of humanity and, like, you know, is sort of like, oh, what could we do, is bullshit. It's not an inevitability of humanity. It's an inevitability of capitalism. But point being, I think that unfortunately we're going to live in that world. We're going to live in a post-climate change world by the time that millennials are able to actually, like, affect anything in Congress, and Zoomers are allowed to affect anything in Congress. However, I also think that us as a generation can handle things. Like, I think that us as progressive people can handle what we are ultimately thrown at. Like, I think that by the time we can change things, we will be able to change things for the better. And I think that it is a tragedy, and it should never be not held against every single company that is actively contributing to climate change right now, that it's just going to happen because they aren't going to do anything about it. And that should, like, we should nationalize energy. We should nationalize a lot of companies. We should have capital flight laws so that once we tax billionaires, they can't leave without having all their shit seized. But, point being, this is a song about feeling hopeless in the face of all of this. And I just sort of want to say that, like, yes, hold on to that feeling, but also hold on to the hope that we can deal with the fuck-ups that our parents and our ancestors have made. We can fix things, even if we can't fix things right this second.
So, I did a little bit of research, and apparently 2027, which is the seven more to go, 2028, I guess, depending on when he recorded, is like the cutoff date for if the current, like, rate of climate change doesn't slow down, then the worst changes will happen. But if, like, we slow down before then we can avoid some of the worst permanent changes. So the seven more to go fits with that. I also kind of wonder, because I wonder if it's also sort of in, like, a admission of, like, in 7 years, the people who are, like, progressive and willing to make changes will be old enough to affect things then.
Yeah.
Just sort of a sort of kind of blanket statement of, like, you know, people will be old enough to enter Congress by then, and maybe then we can make a difference.
Yeah.
It's kind of vague, but I think in this case, it's meant to convey this sort of struggle that the rest of the song has. All the other lyrics, while being strange, are kind of a weird struggle between different sides. And I think the vagueness of what he's talking about in the end fits that. There's one more song I want to talk about, which is, I think it's technically the second to last, according to Genius, but I think it's the last one. It's called Goodbye. Oh, okay, it's the one that's the end of the main thing, but it's not the credits song. So it's the song before the credits, last actual song, though.
Yeah.
Goodbye is sort of a recap over the special. It's basically just like, you know, it opens with him saying, like, goodbye, if we meet on the street, then I'll see you, or whatever. He mentions, like, do I really have to finish? Sort of there's a bit earlier on with the line, like, well, look who's inside again, went out to look for a reason to hide again, well, buddy, you found it, now come out with your hands up, we've got you surrounded. So this line, obviously, it's told in, like, a mocking sort of tone. It feels like this is a struggle that's like, did you really want to return to performing, or, you know, was the pandemic an excuse to get back inside and return to living out of the spotlight, I guess? Again, disclaimer, not actually talking about not being an expert on his mindset, but there's this sort of battle going back and forth of, like, was this an excuse to just kind of stay like a hermit? Was he going, like, he was planning on returning to performing in 2020. Was this a reason he was looking for to change his mind without being forced to change his mind? Or rather, yeah, with being forced. And asking, do I really have to finish, is sort of like asking, can he just keep working on this special longer and longer? Like, do I have to finish the special now that the, like, restrictions are kind of easing up? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it feels like, I think it really does speak as well to the mindset, because, like, on one hand, being able to go outside frees you up. On one hand, you know, being under lockdown is, like, isolating. It is terrible. It is, you know, sort of like it sticks you in a place that you just can't leave, and you just want to leave, and it's just the worst. But at the same time, you know, to, like, I'm an introvert, and even I wanted to leave, but, you know, now that I'm out and about again, now that I am, you know, working a job again, like, is that really a return to, you know, the good life? Like, life wasn't good before the pandemic. Life was shit before the pandemic. And so, like, it's very personal of, like, you know, oh, it's the perfect excuse to stay inside and do nothing. But, you know, with the restrictions lifted, will I even go outside as much? And the answer is invariably yes. But, you know, it speaks to that mindset of, like, the pandemic is not the problem. It's simply the culmination of the problem. And so I think that, like, outside of Bo Burnham, like, outside of a personal message, that's the message I took from it of, like, you know, I want to go outside to see my friends. I don't want to go out. I don't want to have to do a job because I need to make rent. I don't want to have to waste my time at a desk like 8 hours of the day. So I'm being shoved out at gunpoint, basically.
Yeah, the line, like, come out with your hands up, we've got you surrounded, is obviously literally being shoved out by gunpoint in sort of the tropey sense of, like, cops talking to a criminal who's inside a building. But also, the we've got you surrounded is sort of, like, fame or having fans or attention, being in the spotlight.
Yeah.
That, you know, people are surrounding him, waiting for him to tell a joke or something. And speaking of which, there are references to a bunch of previous songs, including the song Comedy. You know, he says, like, if I'm in a house that's full of smoke, I'll panic, so call me up and tell me a joke. Sort of a, like, role reversal of Comedy, saying, like, you know, I'm having a lot of struggles here. I could use some help with a joke. But then he says, like, you're really joking at a time like this, like he said before. In this case, he's like, wait a minute. What are you doing telling me a joke if my house is on fire? Sort of a acceptance that what he's doing wasn't really helping. That, like, if he were to put himself in somebody's shoes, then it wouldn't go so well for him. He also does say, like, here's a fun idea. How about I sit on the couch and watch you next time? Almost, yeah. Like, this has taken so much effort. Let me just take a break. How does it feel to, like, put yourself on display for the whole world? You know, there's a sort of, like, I'm done with this. It's your turn now sort of thing.
Yeah, that is a theme that, like, has shown up in some of his other songs as well. I love it because it does sort of, you know, remind you that at the end of the day, Bo Burnham, for all of his privilege, for all of his comedy, for all of his, you know, his status, his stage, is simply a man, is simply a flightless bird, and, like, is simply someone else who is struggling, who has problems. And so, you know, on one hand, we expect, you know, a comedy special out of him. We expect him to do his song and dance, but is that fair to expect? Like, you know, in earlier songs, he plays with the entitlement of that. But in this one, it feels like he's kind of playing with the, you know, the reverse entitlement. The, like, you know, should we expect a comedian who is going through his own shit? Should we expect some random person, even if they are ultimately, you know, kind of well off, to be comforting us in this time? Because, you know, we're all struggling. And again, I'm still going to put on blast the, you know, I'm still going to put on blast the celebrities who basically did nothing, who, you know, were like, oh, we're all in this together. But, like, I'm giving Bo Burnham a specific pass because, like, Bo Burnham is famous and is very well off. I would not call Bo Burnham, like, extremely rich. I would not call Bo Burnham, like, you know, I would not call him extremely privileged. He is very privileged, but he is not, like, he is not, you know, Gal Gadot singing Imagine while going back to her fucking mansion in Israel. So, like, yeah.
Yeah. He also mentions, like, am I right back where I started 14 years ago? Again, calling back to those early YouTube videos, how he's kind of come full circle making videos in his bedroom. And then he does a sort of reprise of the a little bit of everything motif, kind of like he participated in that then burgeoning cycle of content creator, content createe. Maybe all he wanted was like, you know, not everything in the world, but a bit of everything, a bit of money, a bit of fame, maybe. But like, you know, that sort of wish kind of monkey's pawed back to him. He also says, I'm finished playing and I'm staying inside. So like, maybe he does want to just stay inside now. Maybe he's done putting himself out on display there.
Yeah.
And so
go ahead.
I just wanted to talk about the very last scene.
Yes, because I also wanted to as well.
Yes. So at the end of the special, after that, he's talking about you're really joking at a time like this. And then the spotlight suddenly hits him and it repeats the well, look who's inside again. Except like the camera cuts and he's naked all of a sudden. He's like looking at the spotlight that's on him like somebody who's been trapped in a cave for years, like blinded by it. He eventually walks out fully clothed into like a TV set of like a house, and he tries to get back in and is locked outside of the house while like a laugh track plays the whole time, the spotlight still shining on him. And then finally it pans out to show him watching this scene in a movie theater, which,
and like the very last scene is, you know, he's watching it as the laughing is happening, and then he smiles and it immediately cuts.
Yeah. So for one thing, this is another example of him watching himself, another sort of third person view. In this case, he is able to find the comedy in it. The joke of being locked outside of your house like that is such like a basic joke, like a level one sitcom joke.
Yeah.
That like, it's kind of, I don't know, kind of, like I said, just kind of basic in a way, but, It still just kind of brings him a smile. And the laugh track certainly helps. There's only a laugh track a few times through the special. I think mainly at the beginning and at the ending. And so it kind of bookends almost. But like, it's like, is he... I don't know, I guess he's kind of chuckling at it. I chuckled at it.
Yeah, I read it as sort of like, if the ending were just that, like, it would... If the ending were that without his retrospection, then, you know, you could read that as, like, you could read into his mental state, basically. You could read into, you know, him as a person in a way that you, like, probably shouldn't, that he really constantly sort of, like, tries to avoid. And so I feel like that last thing sort of emphasizes that, like, what he, like, he is displaying this as a joke, and, like, it has a point behind it, but he is also putting on that act, and like that smile tells me, like, you know, he is displaying that sort of, you know, want to go back inside as more of a joke than as like how he really feels.
Right. The like it being shown at a theater definitely helps remind us, like, this is a movie on Netflix. This is not an actual recording of a person with no editing involved.
Yeah. I also, it really feels like it harkens back. So one little Easter egg is that this entire special, the outside, the ending included, I believe, is it takes place in like the like small guest house he has on his property that is shown in the very end of Make Happy, when he sings one of my favorite songs of his, which is Are You Happy? And Are You Happy, like, one of the best lines is, like, I wouldn't even want it if I got it. Or, yeah, it's like, I wouldn't even want it if I got it. Wait, oh God, my dad was right. And so I feel like the ending scene is kind of like an echo of that, in that, you know, it's the immediate joke of, you know, I went outside and I want to go back inside, but it's still sort of in... I feel like it's basically reminding us that, you know, it's reminding us, much like Goodbye does, that the outside is still a broken place. The outside is still a scary place. The outside, you know, is where all of the problems are. And it can be very tempting to just want to go back inside and not deal with it. but we have to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the inside is both safe, but also like very uncomfortably contemplative. I think that's sort of a running thing that like he constantly displays being inside as a position of safety or comfort. But at the same time, that's sort of the like onus for all of this, like the sort of breakdown-ish style, you know, like welcome to the internet and that funny feeling. I don't want to say they wouldn't have happened if not for the lockdown, but the reason why they are put in a special is because he started making a special during lockdown. So, like, there's, like, all these sort of, like, really, really sharp-cutting, like, kind of depressing songs, these, like, angry songs, they more or less happen because he had to be inside. And I think that like, irony, I guess, it's present throughout the entire special, but this very ending, I think, really helps bring it into focus. Like, he wants to go back inside. Maybe it's because he realizes he locked himself out, but it's not necessarily like inside was any better, you know? He's able to smile and laugh at kind of the situation when he sees himself stuck outside of his house. But at the same time, like, you know, how often was he smiling and laughing while he was inside the house?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that Inside as a whole is very an exceptional, like, critique and takedown of the stratification that the internet does. I feel like it's, you know, a really good outlet for everybody who's been going through lockdown. A really good outlet now that we're trying to get back to normal, although... Even though it really seems like the pandemic isn't over, we're trying to pretend that it is. And so, yeah, I foresee Inside sort of like sticking around, basically. Yeah. I foresee Inside being a seminal work.
So I mentioned earlier that I went back and watched What this morning, and I feel like his older specials are built upon these layers and layers and layers of irony and... like artifice and stuff, and while Inside definitely has that, I think it's more like tender and sincere moments really make it stand out as a comedy special. And you know, like that funny feeling isn't really jokes, it to me at least. And so it really strikes me as being sort of unique in its own sort of place. The concept of recording it over the course of lockdown in one room is like really unique and interesting, and it's utilized like exceptionally well. I think this is not just good as just like an evening watch, but like I don't know, I don't want to say like the great American novel, but it definitely is, like you said, an exceptional, like, seminal work. It feels like a direction that can be taken in many different ways. I don't know what sort of inspiration can be gathered from this, but I think, I don't know, I just think there's something about it that is so different.
Yeah, it feels like it could have only been made during lockdown, during this pandemic, but at the same time, everything about it feels like it doesn't feel like a pandemic created thing that only will relate to the pandemic. It feels like this could have only been made about in the pandemic, but we will be listening to this way after, and we won't be thinking about the pandemic about necessarily. We'll be thinking about everything about it.
Yeah. Let me put it like this. When you look at one of the first scenes, actually, is Bo Burnham recording himself looking at a mirror, but the mirror also shows the camera. Part of what Inside does is it doesn't hide anything. Like, the technology is there. When there's a visual effect, like a background of a tree or something, you know that there's a projector beaming that, because you can see like the projector light beaming it. When there's like lighting involved, you can see it standing on tripods. You can see the instruments he's playing, the things he's sitting on, all these wires on the floor. What I think makes Inside so unique is that, like, the irony and artifice of his previous specials has kind of become played by now. Like, it was definitely unique, it feels like, when it came out, but it feels like that's the current meta, if you will, is, like, the amount of choreography and whatnot. And Inside has an element of rawness to it that is not quite meta yet.
So, do we want to commit the ultimate irony and tell people to engage on the internet?
Yes. You can follow us on social media at NetSurferPro on Facebook and Twitter, where we post teasers about upcoming episodes. You can also talk to us, tell us what you feel about Bo Burnham's Inside, tell us why we are actively feeding the beast of internet engagement. You can also like us on any podcasting platform, give us a rating, give us a review, tell us how depressing this episode was. No, we joke here. It doesn't help, but, you know, we joke here.
Doesn't always help.
But make sure to drive up those clicks so that we can give you everything some of the time. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming, where I talk about things I'm working on, things I'm making, things I'm experiencing because I am insatiable. You can also follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak, where I stream on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday at about 1 p.m. Central Time. I have not streamed the video game Inside, and I don't know if I will, just because it seems like something I would enjoy on my own. But I do stream roguelites, platformers, some speedruns, a lot of competitive games, some fighting games. Been playing Hitman 3 on Fridays. That's been pretty fun. And you can also check out my other podcast, Board Game Bros, where I talk about board games and game design.
You can find me on Twitter at at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWILS0N. I post my hot takes and retweet cool things. All of it's perfectly lawful, but not a lot of it's thoughtful, and it's sometimes really shitty. You can find me on TikTok at Galen Wilson, pretty much the exact same. You can find me on Twitch at Machine Gun Vampire. I might start streaming one day. And you can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, where I might start posting videos one of these days. Who knows? I have executive dysfunction. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, no? I'm not sure. See ya.
See ya.